So last time we got a bride for Isaac. Who was who? Rebecca. Rivka in Hebrew. Her name is actually Rivka. But we call her Rebecca, which I think is nicer. Oof, you guys are a tough audience. So,
we're half dead. We work today.
Yeah. So, Isaac marries Rebecca, and she gets pregnant. She's going to have twins, and she feels miserable, and she feels these two babies fighting in the womb. And she says to God, "Why am I like this?" Like probably many pregnant women have asked, "Why am I like this?" And God says, "There's two nations at war in your womb," which is pretty neat. So this is, of course, Esau and Jacob. And God also tells her that the older will serve the younger, which goes against what normally people did in ancient times, where the oldest son inherited everything. And that also happened, you know, later. Like in England, you know, like we generally have British law, but under British law, the oldest son inherited everything. So if a guy had a huge estate and had four girls and then a boy, the boy inherited everything when the parents died. The girls didn't get anything. Or if you had three sons, whoever the oldest one was got everything, and the other two didn't get anything. Which, you know, isn't really fair, but. The reason they did that, though, was they kept those big estates together. So they didn't have to, you know, start dividing them up. But if you were the boy who didn't get anything, you'd say, "Hey, wait a minute. Can I build a little cabin in the corner or something?" But anyway. But the oldest son, of course, inherited everything in ancient times, too. But so when God tells Rebecca that the older is going to serve the younger, that's backwards. And so that kind of goes along with, you know, God always makes these prophecies or foretellings of things that are unusual so that when it happens, you know that he's behind it. Like the virgin shall be with child. The virgin shall conceive and bear a son. Everybody goes, "What?" So you know that when a virgin conceives and bears a son, that doesn't generally happen by any kind of means that anybody knows of. You know, it has to be supernatural. But anyway, so, yeah, so then when the boys are born, the hairy one's born first. He's really hairy and he's red. So that's Esau. He's also called Edom, which is the Hebrew word for red. And then Jacob is born holding on to Esau's ankle. So the twins are born in rapid succession. First one comes out, next one comes out holding on to the first one's ankle because he doesn't want to be left behind. And so this is a thing that we're going to see as we go through this that Jacob is always doing. He's always trying to get ahead. Even when he's born, he's like trying to get ahead by holding on to his brother. But the brothers don't get along real well, even when they're kids, and especially when they're adults. So he gets named Jacob, Yaakov, which means the supplanter. Some people translate it as the deceiver. So in other words, a supplanter is somebody who takes something that isn't his, gets himself in a position that he's not really supposed to be in. He supplants the other one. He's also called the deceiver because he's always playing tricks on people, as we're going to see. And you remember if you were here before, he plays a trick on his father, plays tricks on his brother, plays tricks on his uncle. I mean, he was a pretty nasty guy. But he's the child of promise. Then his nastiest son gets to be the child of promise out of the 12. Judah's the nastiest one. He gets to be the ancestor of the Messiah. So it doesn't go by how good you are. It goes because God sovereignly picks who he wants to pick. this is going to get turned kind of upside down. And as we see here, we should probably read some of this. In Genesis 25, actually, why don't you start reading in 22 and read down through 26. Genesis 25.
But the children jostled each other in the womb so much that she exclaimed, "If this is like this, why go on living?" She went to consult the Lord, and the Lord answered her, "Two nations are in your womb. Two peoples are separating while still within you. But one will be stronger than the other. The older will serve the younger." When the time for her delivery came, there were twins in her womb. The first to emerge was reddish, and his whole body was like a hairy mandible. So they named him Esau. Next, his brother came out gripping Esau's heels, so he was named Jacob. Isaac was 60 years old when they were born.
Yeah. So remember, when Isaac was born, Abraham was 100. So when these boys are born, Isaac's only 60. So. Man, he's, yeah. So now Jacob, Yaakov, is the supplanter. He knows that there's a promise. Remember, Isaac was the child of promise. God told Abraham and Sarah, "Ishmael's not your guy. You're going to have a son that's going to be both of your sons. Who's the child?" And that's Isaac. So now Isaac has these two boys. Now, let's read a little bit about these boys. Somebody read 27 and 28.
As the boys grew up, Esau became a skillful hunter, a man who lived in the open, whereas Jacob was a simple man who kept to his tents. Isaac preferred Esau because he was fond of game, but Rebekah preferred Jacob.
Okay. So here's the deal. So Esau, he's a manly guy. Remember, he's hairy, he's red. He's a hunter, he's out in the fields. And Jacob's a wuss. He's a big wuss. He sits in the tent with his mother and he watches the cooking shows. And you know, his mother teaches him how to make matzah and stuff. So, you know, he's so if you saw these two guys, you'd probably like Esau better. Because Esau's like this cool guy who goes out hunting. And Jacob's this little wussy guy who's helping his mother cook dinner. So Isaac likes Esau. This is where the trouble's going to come. Isaac likes Esau. Rebecca likes Jacob. Now remember, they're twins. You know, they're born like a couple minutes apart. So that kind of sets the stage for what's going to happen, the deceit that's coming. So Jacob wants what Esau has, which is the birthright, the promise. Now, there's not a good picture of exactly what it means, but what we know it means is the Messiah is going to come from them. Whoever has the promise, the Messiah is going to come through them. Remember the last promise to Abraham. All the communities of the earth will be blessed through you. Now, 7,500-year-old Abraham can't possibly bless people in Sheffield in 2016. But his descendant can. And like we said, that's why we're here. All these years later, we're still talking about Abraham, and we're blessed through Abraham, because he becomes the ancestor of the Messiah. So Isaac is the ancestor of the Messiah. So now, if you look at this family, you would think it's going to be Esau. That's what it looks like so far. But Jacob wants the promise. So then here's this famous story that you probably know, but somebody read 29 to the end of the chapter.
Once when Jacob was cooking a stew, Esau came in from the open country, famished. He said to Jacob, "Let me gulp down some of that red stuff." I am famished. That is why he was called Edom. But Jacob replied, first shall called Edom. But Jacob replied, first shall me your right as firstborn. Look, said Esau, I am on the point of dying. What good is it? Is the right as firstborn to me? But Jacob said, swear to me first. So he sold Jacob his right as firstborn under the oath, under oath. Jacob then gave him some bread and a lentil stew. And Esau ate, drank, got up, and went his way. So Esau treated his right as firstborn with disdain.
Wow. So what's going on here? Jacob's cooking, because, you know, he's a little wuss, he's cooking. And he's got stuff in the microwave, stuff on the stove. And then Esau, the manly guy, comes in and says, I'm starved. Yeah. Everybody uses that expression. Was he really starving? Probably not. He probably ate before. I doubt he was starving. But he's famished, starving. So he doesn't care about his birthright. He doesn't care. He'd rather have the stew than his birthright. This is kind of like a Cain and Abel story. You know? Abel's sacrifice is acceptable to God. Cain's is not. Because Cain's like, oh, here's some apples for you, God. Oh, I know they're rotten, but who cares? I'm not going to use them. Whereas Abel gave the firstborn of the flock. Here, this Esau gives up his birthright so he can have a bowl of lentils and some bread. That's more important to him than being a child of promise. Now, you know, Abraham's dead, but presumably his father, Isaac knows what happened to Abraham. I mean, after all, Isaac almost got sacrificed. He could have said, listen, boys, when I was your age, I had a pretty scary experience. Your grandfather had this big knife. And but they had talked about this. I mean, Abraham, you remember when Abraham died, remember Isaac and Ishmael were both at the funeral. So they knew the story. I mean, Isaac knew who his mother was. Ishmael knew who his mother was. They both had the same father. So I'm sure there was conversations about, well, Isaac is the one that God said is going to be the promise. So Jacob's thinking, well, I'm not the promise. Esau doesn't care. Now, by rights, they're both equal, right? In fact, Esau's the firstborn, technically, even though they're twins. But Esau doesn't care about the promise. He says, you know, what's it to me? I'm starving. Now, lest you think that's terrible, we all do the same thing. You know? I got to go to the soccer game. Who cares about church? I got a sore throat. Why should I go to the Bible study? I'm not going to go all the way over there to do that. I'm tired. We do the same thing. You don't care about your heritage because, you know, you're not feeling 100% fantastic. Or, you know, something comes up and you say, well, I can't go now because this thing came up. You do the same thing. I do that all the time. Everybody does that. I mean, we have a culture now where, you know, the parks are full of kids playing games on Sunday morning. You know, who goes to church? Okay, so he gives up the stew. But he gives up the birthright for a bowl of stew. But the lesson is we do the same thing. We have an even bigger birthright than any of these guys have. You know? We've been saved by the Messiah. We've been saved by what Jesus did on the cross. And we'll sell that for some kid's soccer game or something we're going to do instead. So we do the same thing. Like Solomon writes in Ecclesiastes, there's nothing new under the sun. So let's see what happens now. We're going to skip 26 because it gets too complicated. Now we're going to go to 27. And we're going to find out now that Jacob, the supplanter, is going to take advantage of his father, who's now old, can't see very well, probably can't hear very well, and he launches his plan with the support of his mother, who also deceives the old man. All this because she gave the guy water and watered his camel. Okay, so start reading in, let's read 27, 1 through 4.
When Isaac was old, so old that his eyesight had failed him, he called his older son Esau and said to him, "Son?" "Yes, father," he replied. Isaac then said, "As you can see, I am so old that I may now die at any time. Take your gear, therefore, your quiver and bow, and go out into the country to hunt some game for me. With your catch, prepare an appetizing dish for me, such as I like, and bring it to me to eat, so that I may give you my special blessing before I die."
So the father's just like the son. "Just give me, go get me some food. I'm dying over here, but just go get some of that Dinty Moore beef stew and warm it up in a microwave and bring it over here." The red stuff. Yeah, I don't want any of that. He doesn't want that lentil stuff. He wants like meat. So here's Isaac saying he's going to die any minute. Go out and hunt and prepare me a stew. Okay, that's good. He likes stew. And he's old, so give the old guy what he wants. You know, he's going to die pretty soon. Look what happens in verse 5. So somebody read 5 through 10.
Rebekah had been listening while Isaac was speaking to his son, Esau. So when Esau went out into the country to hunt some game for his father, Rebekah said to her son, "Jacob, listen, I overheard your father tell your brother Esau, bring me some game, and with it prepare an appetizing dish for me to eat, that I may give you my blessing with the Lord's approval before I die. Now, son, listen carefully to what I tell you. Go to the flock and get me 2 choice kids. With these, I will prepare an appetizing dish for your father, such as he likes. And bring it to your father to eat, that he may bless you before he dies."
Okay, stop there. So now, Rebekah makes the plan. Remember, she likes Jacob better. So she says, "Here's what you do. I overheard the whole conversation. So your brother's out hunting. By the time he gets back, who knows, it's going to be hours from now." So she tells Jacob, "Go to the herd, get a couple of goats." He doesn't have to go hunting. The goats are right there. "Get a couple of goats. I'll cook them up, make some stew for your father, and then he'll bless you before he dies." So number one, she wants Jacob promoted. Number two, she could care less that Isaac's probably dying. And number three is she doesn't want the other son to get the advantages. She wants the wussy one to get it. At this point, Jacob's still a wuss. Later on, he's going to get a little more manly. Right now, he's a mama's boy. While poor Esau's out there, you know, looking for animals and hunting and thinking, "Gee, I better do this before my father dies," Jacob just goes and gets a couple of goats. But Jacob's a little confused now, because look what it says. Read verse 11 and 12.
"But Jacob said to his mother Rebekah, 'But my brother Esau is a hairy man, and I am smooth. Suppose my father feels me, He will think I'm making fun of him, and I will bring on myself a curse instead of a blessing.
Yeah. So, Jacob says, look, Esau's a real hairy guy. He's been hairy since he was born. And I'm all smooth, because I'm a wuss. So he's got thick skin, he's got hair. I got no hair and thin, you know, soft skin. You know, when I was growing up, you know, all the men I knew worked either in the building trades or in factories, and they all had these big muscular hands, you know, so when they shook hands with you, it was like, and they always used to say, you know, this is a real man's hand. You know, if you work in an office and you have some kind of job like that, and you got sissy hands, soft like a girl, this is real hands. So that's kind of like what Jacob said. He says, you know, I'm smooth and not hairy, and my brother's hairy. And if Isaac realizes that I'm not Esau, he's going to be mad at me. And instead of getting blessed, I'm going to get cursed. So he says, that's a good trick bomb, but I don't think it's going to work. So now Rebecca, who of course wants to go on with the plot. So now remember, these are holy people. Remember when we studied David? You know, these are holy people. You know, it's adultery, murder, deceit. You know, it's like goes on and on and on. It's kind of like the story of human behavior.
Right, right. Maybe even a little worse.
Yeah, so let's read, read 13 first. Anybody?
His mother, however, replied, let any curse against you, son, fall on me. Just do as I say. Go and get me the kid.
Okay. So now here's the mother doubly encouraging her son to do something deceitful. Now, you know, when you're raising, now we don't know how old they were, but they were young men at this point. They weren't little kids. So, you know, most mothers and fathers will encourage their kids to be honest and be ethical and do the right thing. So she's encouraging him to do this dishonest thing. And when he objects, she goes, I'll take responsibility for it. Just go do it. 14 to the end of, 14 through 17.
So Jacob went and got them and brought them to his mother. And with them she prepared an appetizing dish, such as his father liked. Rebecca then took the best clothes of her older son Esau that she had in the house and gave them to her younger son Jacob to wear. And with the skins of the kids she covered up his hands and the hairless part of his neck. Then she handed her son Jacob the appetizing dish and the bread she had prepared.
So now, part three of the deceit. She gets the food ready. She puts Esau's clothes on Jacob so that it smells like Esau. You know? Everybody's got kind of a different smell to themselves, right? And it comes off on your clothes. Right? So, I mean, let's say you've got, you know, a couple kids of your own and a couple of neighbor kids that are there playing. You know which clothes belong to who, even if you don't look at them, because you know by the smell and the feel, this is my kid's clothes, this is not. And can't you tell your relatives and other people just being in the room with them? You don't have to see them. So she puts Esau's clothes on him and then takes the hair from these goats that she kills, that he killed or whoever killed them, and puts them on his arms and on his neck. So that he's hairy. I mean, this Esau guy must have been like really hairy.
Yeah.
I mean, this guy must have been disgusting.
Yeah, really.
I mean, man. Man, if he's going to feel like a goat.
A dirty old goat, too.
He probably smelled like a goat, too.
Yeah, right.
His clothes probably reeked. Because he was always out hunting and stuff. And he didn't exactly take him to a dry cleaner. So the clothes probably really reeked. So the mother is doing all this deceit in favor of the younger son and playing the deceit on her husband, who's blind and sick. But she's one of the matriarchs. You know, she's Rebecca, Rivka is like, everybody talks about her all the time in every synagogue. Every day you bless your female children. The father of the house blesses the sons and the daughters every night before they go to bed. Every Saturday morning at the synagogue, kids come up to the front, and when the little girls get blessed, the rabbi says, may God make you like Sarah, Rebecca,
oh boy,
Rachel, and Leah.
Yeah,
they want their daughters to be like this.
The same Rebecca. I know.
Yeah. And nobody called her Becky either. You can't do that till you get to heaven. So isn't that wild? So now, and then she gives Jacob the food to take in. So we're going to play a trick on the old man. He's going to think you're Esau. Somebody read 18 through 23.
So he went into his father and said, my father. And he said, here I am. Who are you, my son? Jacob said to his father, I am Esau, your firstborn. I have done as you told me. I'll sit up and eat my game, that you may bless me. But Isaac said to his son, how is it that you have found it so quickly, my son? He answered, because the Lord your God granted me success.
Wait, take a pause there. I mean, look what's going on here. It's like lie after lie after lie. So now the kid, now Jacob goes in. Here's the stew. You know, who are you? I'm Esau. Here's the stew. How'd you get back so fast? Well, God gave me success. So he even invokes God in the deceit. Now, this is the father of the nation. You know, he's going to have the 12 sons. He's going to have his name changed to Israel by God himself. And this is what he does. See, we think about all our holy pictures of everybody going. It wasn't like that. Go ahead.
Then Isaac said to Jacob, come near, that I may feel you, my son, to know whether you are really my son Esau or not. So Jacob went near to Isaac, his father, who felt him and said, the voice is Jacob's voice, but the hands are the hands of Esau. And he did not recognize him because his hands were hairy like his brother Esau's hands. So he blessed him.
So he says, you sound like Jacob, but you feel like Esau. I mean, this was one hairy dude. Remember, he's covered with goat hair. Man, can't get over it. So he says, well, it must be Esau. So he blesses him. Number one is the oldest son. Number two, he brought him the stew. Man, so this stew is like a big thing here with these guys. Sell the birthright for a stew. Bless the wrong guy. Who cares? As long as I get some stew. Of course, I do it for donuts. So the deceit goes on, and he doesn't recognize him because of the disguise, but he knows the voice is the voice of Jacob. Let me see, where'd you leave off? Okay, now go to 24, or 25 rather.
Then Isaac said, serve me your game, son, that I may eat of it, and then give you my blessing. Jacob served it to him, and Isaac ate. He brought him wine, and he drank. Finally, his father Isaac said to him, come closer, son, and kiss me. As Jacob went up and kissed him, Isaac smelled the fragrance of his clothes. With that, he blessed him, saying,
I'm going to stop there for a second. Remember, he's got Esau's clothes. He can't see. He's blind. Smells the clothes. Feels his hands. So now he figures, well, this is Esau. Plus, he brought me the stew. I mean, this kid's hunting and making stew all the time. So, even when he gets close to him, he's even more convinced that it's Esau. Because he smells the clothes. I mean, that's wild. So they totally pull it over on the guy. Poor guy can't see. He's laying in bed. All he wants to do is have some stew. And why he has to be, you know, he blesses them now because he thinks he's going to die right now. Now, the blessing's important, like I say. In Hebrew terms, there's nothing more important than a blessing on somebody. In fact, sometimes when you bless somebody, you change their name, like we're going to see, like happens to Jacob. Gets his name changed to Esau. Abram got his name changed to Abraham. When somebody has a new mission, they change their name. But the blessing is important because it's like putting God's favor on them. And once you do it, you don't undo it. I mean, an observant Jewish father will say the blessing on his kids every single night before they go to bed. In fact, it's more than... It's actually partly based on what we just read. And they won't just say from across the room, oh, you boys over there, bless you guys, go to bed, good night, have a good sleep, we'll see you in the morning. Oh, and you girls, bless you girls, have a good sleep, you know, we'll see you in the morning. It's, they get right up to the guy, and the father puts his arms around him and hugs him. In fact, from this passage, most of the commentaries say that the father hugs his kids so close that, you know, they bond together that way all their lives. So when Isaac's hugging this kid, he guesses it's the wrong kid. So maybe he's a little demented too, I don't know. But so the blessing is very important. And the blessing also uses people's names. We're going to see toward the end, because when you bless the boys, you say, may God make you like Manasseh and Ephraim. And then the girls are like, you know, they name all these famous people, and they go down through Sarah, Rebecca, Rachel, Leah, Esther. And they name all these famous people and say, God's going to make you like that. So the blessing is really, really, really important. And the names their kids are very important too. You don't just pick a name because you like it. Every name means something. And the name of the person becomes like an identity for them. Like Jesus' name means salvation. Remember? Yeshua means salvation. So he gets named Salvation. You know, they didn't name him that because they liked the name. They could have named him Levi or Ebenezer or Joel. Or they could have named him, you know, Benjamin. But no, they have to name him Yeshua because it means salvation. So the names and the blessings are very important. So they named this baby Jacob, the deceiver, the supplanter, and then you see what happens to him. He's deceiving and he's supplanting. Now, look at this blessing. Go ahead, read from there till through 29.
Ah, the fragrance of my son is like the fragrance of the field that the Lord has blessed. May God give to you of the dew of the heavens, and of the fertility of the earth, abundance of grain and wine. Let peoples serve you, and nations pay homage to you. Be masters of your brothers, and may your mother's sons bow down to you. Cursed be those who curse you, and blessed be those who bless you.
So here's the blessing. I hope everything goes really great with you, that you prosper, that you have food, that people honor you, people bow down to you.
Even your sons.
Your mother's sons, so your brothers and your brother, whoever. He only has one brother, but, you know, your cousins and your everybody else around is going to bow down to you. You're going to be so awesome. People are going to serve you. Nations are going to bow down to you. And I hope whoever curses you gets cursed. And whoever blesses you gets blessed. Remember, God said, I bless you, to Abraham, I'll bless who blesses you and curse who curses you. So, this is pretty amazing. This is the wrong kid. Not really the wrong kid, because God really wants to promise to go through Jacob. So God uses the deceit to do the plan. Now, does God approve of deceit? No. But he's got to go with it. Because we're not dealing with holy people here. We're dealing with humans. This is the plan, is to go through Jacob anyway. God doesn't say, oh, he blessed the wrong kid. Now I got to change everything. Look what happens starting in 30. Go.
Jacob had scarcely left his father after Isaac had finished blessing him when his brother Esau came back from the hunt. Then he too prepared a dish and bringing it to his father, he said, let my father sit up and eat some of the son's game, that you may then give me your blessing. His father Isaac asked him, who are you? He said, I am your son, your firstborn son, Esau. Isaac trembled greatly. Who was it then, he asked, that hunted game and brought it to me? I ate it all just before you came in, and I blessed him. Now he is blessed.
Okay, stop. Pause there a second. So now he's full of eating the other stuff. Now here comes Esau with another bowl of stew. Jacob says, oh man, I'm full. Isaac says, oh man, I need to take a nap now, I'm full. So now, it gets uncovered. Because now he realizes what happened. Now, does he say, oh, no problem, I'll just take that blessing back and give you the blessing? Nope. The blessing is so powerful, look what it says. Isaac trembled violently because he's upset. I've already blessed him, yes, and he shall be blessed. In other words, you're not going to undo the blessing. That's how powerful it is. You can't undo it. We'll see examples of that too if we... I don't think there were any in John, but in the New Testament there's examples of that. Somebody gets blessed and then that's it. They're blessed. You can't unbless them. They can unbless themselves, but you can't unbless them. Okay, now, go ahead from 34.
As he heard his father's words, Esau burst into loud bitter sobbing and said, Father, bless me too. When Isaac said, your brother came here by a ruse and carried off your blessing, Esau exclaimed, he is well named Jacob, is he not? He has supplanted me twice. First he took away my right as firstborn, and now he has taken away my blessing.
Okay, pause there. Woo. So when Esau realizes what happens, he gets mad. And said, see, no wonder you guys named him Yaakov. See, he's a supplanter. Here's the proof of it. He stole my birthright twice. First with the stew, and now he got your blessing. He faked me out twice. He's a deceiver. And then later he's going to deceive his uncle. But he's a deceiver. And you see that Esau's mad. He's bitter and crying out. I mean, be mad. And poor old Isaac's like, I can't tell who's who. So isn't it... Is he not rightly named Yaakov, for he has supplanted me two times? Okay, now look what he says to his father. Go.
Then he said, have you not saved a blessing for me? Isaac replied to Esau, I have already appointed him your master, and I have assigned to him all his kindred as his servants. Besides, I have sustained him with grain and wine. What then can I do for you, my son? But Esau said to his father, have you only one blessing, father? Bless me too, father. And Esau wept aloud. His father Isaac said in response.
Good question up there. So look at poor Esau. He's like, can I have a blessing too? Come on, dude. You know, I've been doing all this stuff. I've been out hunting and this little wuss has been over here faking you out. This is bad. This is bad stuff. And it isn't just, you know, when you think about what they're quarreling over, they're not just quarreling over who's going to inherit the, you know, $1,000. They're like saying who's going to have the promise that's going to go all through the ages, that's going to end up at the cross. This is what they're arguing about. They don't realize that yet, but this is what they're arguing about. So, you know, so what's our situation? We have Jesus descended directly from Jacob through which boy? Judah. Remember Jesus is the line of Judah. So he's descended through Judah, Jacob's son. Esau goes off to Jababa land and has a totally different set of descendants that have nothing to do with Jesus. In fact, they're always fighting with the Edomites, which are Esau's descendants are called the Edomites. And the Jews are always, they're Hered and Hairy. Man, they saw these hairy guys coming and they got to be Esau's kids. Yeah. So, you know, just like Ishmael and Isaac were a dividing point, these kids are a dividing point, except they got the same mother and the same father. They're not half-brothers, they're full brothers. But then Esau goes off and just, he becomes, you know, a disaster. And Jacob becomes Israel. It's pretty amazing. See, I wonder after Jacob died, like, or when he was old and still, you know, thinking about what his life had been, it's just probably like blew his mind, thinking, gee, you know, I faked out my brother, faked out my father, I get all this stuff. Esau's out there being a disaster somewhere. And God blesses me even though I'm a deceiver. Interesting. So now here's the blessing that Esau gets. They'll read 39 and 40.
His father Isaac said in response, "See, far from the fertile earth will be your dwelling, far from the dew of the heavens above. By your sword you will live, and your brother you will serve. But when you become restless, you will throw off his yoke from your neck."
So he didn't get much of a blessing. You don't get the dew. You don't get the
curse.
Yeah. You don't get any of the cool stuff. You have to live by the sword. I don't think that's fair. It's kind of, it just doesn't seem right. Like, you know, 20-some lessons from now when God tells Moses, okay, you blew it, you're not going in the promised land. You say, well, come on, look at all the stuff I'm doing. Well, tough. So he gets a pretty lame blessing.
Yeah.
So now look what Esau. So look what happens now. Now if I was Esau, I'd be mad at my father plus my brother. Because, you know.
And your mother.
Not to mention your mother. So poor Esau, he's gotten hit like all around. Okay, so somebody start reading at 41.
Esau bore Jacob a grudge because of the blessing his father had given him. He said to himself, "When the lion of mourning for my father comes, I will kill my brother Jacob."
Okay, so that's, you know, he's mad. He says, as soon as my father's dead, I'm killing Jacob.
When Rebecca got news of what her older son Esau had in mind, she called her younger son Jacob and said to him, "Listen, your brother Esau intends to settle accounts with you by killing you. Therefore, son, do what I tell you. Flee at once to my brother Laban in Haran and stay with him a while until your brother's fury subsides. Until your brother's anger against you subsides and he forgets that what you did to him. Then I will send for you and bring you back. Must I lose both of you in a single night?"
Yes, and all of a sudden she's worried about Esau too. But So now she makes, see, Rebecca never stops. Now she makes another plan. She says to Jacob, you know, your brother's going to kill you, so you got to get out of here. So you can go stay with my brother. Remember, when they went to pick Rebecca as the wife, her father was dead, and Laban, her brother, was the one who made the arrangement that they could, she could go and marry Isaac. So now she says, Jacob, you better get out of here. Why don't you go to my brother's and hang out there for a while, because your brother's a lunatic, but eventually he'll calm down.
She hopes.
Yeah. But she makes this kind of half-baked thing, you know. Should I lose both of you in one day? So Jacob now God's going to use this maneuver to do big stuff too. Because remember when Jacob goes to Haran to stay with his uncle, he's going to meet Rachel and Leah. He's going to marry the two sisters. Which sounds ridiculous, but, you know, he's going to start making descendants with the two sisters, a couple of slave girls, whoever else. These guys really got around. Yes, it was a trick on him. Laban deceived him. Well, we'll get to that. And then Jacob was like, hey, wait a minute, you pulled a trick on me. He said, ha-ha, you like it. Because people who play tricks, they hate it when somebody plays a trick on them, because they don't know how to handle that. Because they're so used to being the one who's doing it. So he's going to get tricked back. So, and then interestingly, we're not going to get into it, but Esau marries Ishmael's daughter, who is basically his cousin. Ishmael's his sort of half-uncle, because he's Isaac's half-brother. So he marries his half-cousin, and that gives rise to the Edomites. And the Edomites, they got a lot of unsavory characters that the Jews have to deal with later. Isn't this wild? So now, in 28, starting at verse 10, is a really cool passage that has a lot of meaning to it. And it should remind you of something we did, I don't know how long ago, when, I'll give you a hint, it was right after Lou suggested that we study John's Gospel. If you figure it out, you get extra credit on the final. Jacob is on the way, and he has this unbelievable experience. So somebody start reading. Actually, I'll start reading at 10.
Jacob departed from Beersheba and proceeded toward Haran. When he came upon a certain shrine, as the sun had already set, he stopped there for the night. Taking one of the stones at the shrine, he put it under his head and lay down to sleep at that spot.
So he put the stone, he's using the stone for a pillow. This guy doesn't care about like sleep number beds or therapeutic mattress or whatever the thing's called. Doesn't care about it. I mean, he's got a stone for a pillow. So see, he's not a wuss anymore. I mean, if you can use a stone for a pillow, you're not a wuss anymore.
Right.
Go ahead.
You graduated. Then he had a dream. A stairway rested on the ground, with its top reaching to the heavens, and God's messengers were going up and down on it. And there was the Lord standing beside him and saying, I, the Lord, and the God of your forefather Abraham, and the God of Isaac, the land on which you are lying I will give to you and your descendants. These shall be as plentiful as the dust of the earth, and through them you shall spread out east and west, north and south. In you and your descendants all the nations of the earth shall find blessing. Know that I am with you. I will protect you wherever you go and bring you back to this land.
I will never leave you until I have done what I have promised you. When Jacob awoke from his sleep, he exclaimed, truly the Lord is in this spot, although I did not know it. In solemn wonder he cried out, oh, awesome is this shrine. This is nothing else but the abode of God, and this is the gateway to heaven. Early.
Oh, it's not there for a minute. All right. Think about what's going on here. This is like so awesome. Let's take the easy part first. God repeats the promise. This is in a dream. God repeats the promises he made to Abraham, to Jacob. God's promises never, you know, if God's promises can't be trusted, then we don't know where we stand. I mean, if God can make a promise and then break it, or make a promise and then say, oh, that's not what I really meant, then how do we know anything is true? You know, how do we know how we can be saved and go to heaven if God's going to change his mind? Oh, no, change my mind. We're not doing the Jesus part anymore. We're doing this other part now. Sorry, you did the Jesus thing, you're out. That's not going to happen because God doesn't change his mind. So he made a promise to Abraham. He repeated it to Isaac. Now he repeats it to Jacob. Right? So the easy part is, he says, you're going to have descendants like the dust of the earth. You're going to spread to the west, to the east, to the north, and the south. And by you and your descendants, all the families of the earth are going to be blessed. And Jacob, through you is going to come some blessing that's going to be for everybody on the earth. Jesus of the line of Judah. Right? So through you is going to come Messiah. He doesn't have any kids yet. He's not married yet. So he doesn't know exactly how this is going to work out, but all the nations of the earth are going to be blessed through him. He's the deceiver, the supplanter. He just fooled his father, his brother, did all this wrong stuff. Everybody's going to be blessed because of him. Okay, that's the easy part. Now, look at this. There's a ladder set up on the earth. And the top of it is in heaven. The base of it's on the earth. A ladder. And there's angels going up and down. This is Jacob's ladder. And there's angels ascending and descending on this ladder in Jacob's dream. And God is there. Now, some translations say God is above it, and some say he's beside it. God's with this ladder, and there's angels going up and down. Is that starting to remind anybody of something from John? So, think about that a second. And so, what does God do? He identifies himself. God always identifies himself. I am the Lord, see, all capitals. I'm Yahweh, except they don't know God's name yet. I'm God. And I'm the God of Abraham. I'm the God of Isaac. God always identifies himself as I'm the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. So there's no question who we're talking about. Remember, all through history, people have had multiple gods. There's really no Jewish people yet. Jacob's going to be the father of them. Right? Through the 12 tribes, the 12 boys. So God identifies himself as the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, just so everybody knows who we're talking about. So God says, I'm here, I'm the God of your father and your grandfather, and I'm giving you all this land. And I'm going to give you, you're going to bless everybody on the earth. And I'm going to be with you all the time, and I'm going to bring you back to this land. Now he's blessing Jacob, who is soon going to have his name changed to Israel. Okay. Does going back to the land ring any bells of what happened to Israel?
Going back to Israel.
Yeah.
1967.
Yeah, 1948, back in the land. After the Babylonian exile, back in the land. So I'm going to bring you back to the land, because it's your land. For I will not leave you until I have done that which I have spoken to you. In other words, these are my promises, and they're going to be for sure. I'm not just saying this today. I'm not just saying this today because we're here. These are sure promises. In the book of James, it says God doesn't change. God has no shadow of turning. You can't see God like this, and all of a sudden he's like this. And you go, oh, wait a minute. That doesn't seem right. He's always the same. So his promises are all going to be the same. So then he wakes up and he says, wow, God is here and I didn't realize it. So he calls the place Beth El. What's Beth? House. What's El? God. Beth El is the house of God. So you know, you see churches named Bethel, everybody calls it Bethel, but it's Beth El. The L's the important part. Remember Michael, Gabriel, Samuel, all the names that end in E-L, that's God. So instead of saying Gabriel, we should be saying Gabriel, because that's the important part. Israel is the important part. E-L is God. And what we call, I always chuckle when people say, well, you know, Michael and Samuel and Gabriel, those are Christian names. Well, actually, they're Jewish names. Right? Mm-hmm. And what did we learn about Gabriel? You don't make him mad. Mary questioned him, but she got away with it. Zacharias questioned him, and he got slapped. So when Gabriel comes, you just say, yes, sir. So, he says, surely the Lord, all capitals. So if God is in this place, and I didn't know it, how awesome is this place? Because you know, when you're in a place where God is, it's awesome. Right? Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, you walk into a church, you know God is there. You say, wow, this is awesome. It doesn't matter whether the church is in Sheffield or Peru or Sweden or, I mean, or wherever it is. You walk in and you know God is there. You say, well, this is awesome. And it's not necessarily even in the church building, because we're not actually in a church building here, but we know he's here, because wherever two or three are gathered in my name, I'm there. So we know he's here. Right? You don't have to be like in a cathedral to know God's there, but anyway. So Jacob says, man, this place is so awesome. This is none other than the house of God. This is Bethel, and this is the gate of heaven. Now, he saw a ladder with angels going up and down. And somebody turned to John chapter 1. You guys are supposed to know this. John chapter 1. At the very end of chapter 1. We called Nathaniel, okay? Chapter 1, verse 51. Well, actually, and again, remember Philip goes and gets Nathaniel, says we found the Messiah. He's Jesus of Nazareth. He says, Nazareth, can anything good come out of Nazareth? Nathaniel's a snot. Nazareth is a backwater dump. Can anything good come out of Nazareth? Okay? Let's read, I'll start reading at verse 48. Because you know the story. Jesus sees Nathanael coming and says, here comes a true Israelite. After Nathanael insults Jesus and his town, Jesus says, here comes a true Israelite. There's no guile in him. You know, he just said something outrageously creepy and arrogant that Jesus says, oh man, you know, look, he's awesome. Oh, if you ever do Song of Songs, you guys will go nuts. But anyway, start reading at 48.
Nathanael said to him, "How do you know me?" Jesus answered and said to him, "Before Philip called you, I saw you under the fig tree." Nathanael answered him, "Rabbi, you are the Son of God. You are the King of Israel." Jesus answered and said to him, "Do you believe because I told you that I saw you under the fig tree? You will see greater things than this." And he said to them, "Amen, amen, I say to you, you will see the sky open and the angels of God ascending and descending on the Son of Man." Okay.
Jacob's ladder, what did Jacob see? What were the angels
ascending and descending?
Yeah, they were on what?
Ladder.
And what did Jacob call it? This is the gate of heaven. And, yeah, and it says God was above or God beside. Now, Jesus is telling Nathanael, you're going to see angels ascending and descending on the Son of Man. Now, why does he say that? Yeah, that's right, because he's the gateway to heaven. He's the ladder that goes to heaven. We see that. Jacob saw, you know, a ladder with angels going up and down. Said, "Boy, this is so awesome! I can't even believe it." Nathanael and us, we see the same thing Nathanael saw. We see the Son of Man as the gateway to heaven, the ladder that goes to heaven. Angels go up and down, and we get to be with them. Am I the only one who thinks that's awesome?
No.
I love this. You're going to see heaven open up and angels ascending and descending on the Son of Man. He's the ladder. God was beside the ladder, now he is the ladder. You know, and when we talked in Romans about how we go from law to grace, you know, under law, God's there, but you know, you got to watch what you're doing. Now you go there because of God. God is the ladder. Whole different paradigm. He's not there to whack us and knock us off the ladder. He's the ladder that gets us there. So Jacob gets so excited, look what he does. Start reading at 18.
Early the next morning, Jacob took the stone that he had put under his head, set it up as a sacred pillar, and poured oil on top of it. He named that place Bethel Moriah, the former name of the town had been Luz. Jacob then made this vow: "If God will be with me and protect me on this journey I am making, and give me food to eat and clothes to wear, and I come back safely to my father's house, the Lord will be my God. The stone that I have set up as a sacred pillar will be the house of God. Of everything you give me, I will return a tenth part to you without fail."
So Jacob promises he's going to pay a tithe. So whenever God takes up a collection, Jacob's going to put a tenth in there. Then, of course, later that becomes God's law to give a tenth. And that's of your gross income, not after taxes. So he makes a little memorial there as a remembrance of what happened there. This is the first time it's mentioned, but as we go through this, you remember if you did it before, where every place something happened, God said, put a little monument here of stones. So when you're walking around with your kids and they say, "Hey, how come there's a pile of stones here?" You say, "Oh, because this is what happened here." We do that, right? We have monuments. Everybody has monuments. So Jacob marks the spot. He says, "This is God's house." And called it God's house. Then he says, "Well, if God goes with me and I come back here, I'm giving a tenth of everything I have to him." This doesn't mean he's bargaining with him. It just means that he's excited about everything that happened. So Jacob's excited about this. But then, you know, being the typical man, he goes from this awesome experience of, wow, God's here, this is God's house, I can't wait to come back and do this, to getting sidetracked by a beautiful woman. This is like, you know, normal stuff. At least for men. This is normal stuff. So next time we'll meet Leah and Rachel.